Krishna, Sufis, the People of the Path, Volume 2, Talks on Sufism, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India, Discourse Number 11.
Bhagwan, the Sufi ancient Junad taught by demonstration, through a method in which he actually lived the part which he was trying to illustrate. This is an example. Once he was found by a number of seekers, sitting surrounded by every imaginable luxury. These people left his presence and sought the house of a most austere and ascetic old man, whose surroundings were so plain that he had nothing but a mat and a jug of water. The spokesman of the seekers said, "Your simple manners and austere environment are much more to our liking than the garish and shocking excesses of Junad, who seems to have turned his back upon the path of truth." The ascetic heaved a great sigh and started to weep. "My dear friends, shallowly infected by outward signs which beset man at every turn, know this and cease to be unfortunate. The great Junad is surrounded at this moment by luxury because he is impervious to luxury, and I am surrounded by simplicity because I am impervious to simplicity."
The belief in the myth of change is the most dangerous kind of belief. Man has suffered much from it, much more than by any other belief. The myth of change, that something better is possible, that man can improve upon himself, that there is some place to go, somebody to be, that there is some kind of utopia, that has corrupted human minds infinitely down the centuries. It has been a constant passing. Man is already there. Man has been all along that which he wants to be. Man need not change in order to be. All that is needed is an understanding, an awareness, not a change. Becoming is never going to give you being. Through becoming, you will remain constantly in anguish, in tension. Because becoming means the goal is somewhere else. The goal is never here, never now. The goal is far away. You have to strive for it. And your whole life is wasted in striving. And you can go on striving and you will not find it, because the goal is here and now, and you are looking then and there. Your being is in the present, and all ideas of beginning are projections in the future. By projecting in the future, you go on missing the present. That's a way of escaping from the reality. The idea that you have to become something is the idea that takes you away from your real being, from your authentic being. You are already that. That's why I say the myth of change is one of the most dangerous myths. It has two dimensions to it. One is political, another is religious. The political dimension is that the society can be improved, that revolution can help, that there is an utopia which can be realized. Because of this, politicians had been able to torture, murder, to exploit, to oppress. And people have suffered in the hope that revolution is going to happen. That revolution never happens. Revolutions come and go, and the society remains as it has been always. Hitler's, Stalin's, Mao's can exploit people for their own sake. And obviously, you have to pay for it if you want to get to the utopia, to that wonderland, to paradise. This is the secular dimension of the same myth, that something better is possible. Right now it is not there, but someday it can be. You have to sacrifice for it. Millions of people were killed in Soviet Russia, tortured inhumanly, for their own good. And the logic says that naturally, if you want to have a better society, who is going to pay for it? You are going to pay for it. So the people cannot even revolt. They cannot even resist. If they resist, they look like enemies of the revolution. And the myth is so deep-rooted in the minds that they accept all kind of humiliations in the hope that maybe we cannot live in a golden age, our children will live. This is the secular direction of the same neurosis. The religious dimension is that you can have a better future. If not in this life, then in the next. Of course, you have to sacrifice. If you sacrifice the present, you will have the future. That future never comes. Future in itself cannot come. The tomorrow is not possible. It is always today. It is always the present that is there. Future is just in the mind, in the imagination. It is a dream. It is not part of reality. The political myth has been taken up by the savages, those who want to torture others. And the religious myth has been taken up by the messages who want to torture themselves. Torture yourself. Fast. Don't sleep. Don't do this. Don't do that. This is the whole secret of the so-called ascetic attitude towards life. Torture yourself, and naturally your body is helpless. Your body is defenseless. It cannot protest. It cannot go against you. There is a possibility that people may revolt against the politician. But what is the possibility that your body may revolt against you? No possibility. The body is very innocent, helpless. You can go on torturing it. And you can go on feeling that you have immense power because you can torture. You can go on killing it and feel powerful. And you can attain to a great ego. There are two kinds of ill people in the world, the sadists and the masochists. Sadists are those whose enjoyment consists in torturing others. And masochists are those whose enjoyment consists in torturing themselves. but it is the same violence, it is the same aggression. The sadist throws it on somebody else, the masochist turns it upon himself. Because the sadist throws it against the others, sooner or later they will revolt. The masochist throws it on himself, there is nobody to revolt. In fact, all revolutionaries, once they are in power, by and by, lose respect. Sooner or later, they are dethroned. Sooner or later, their power is destroyed. Sooner or later, they are thought to be criminals. Your whole history consists of these criminals. Your history is not the history of humanity. Because it is not the history of humanness. How it can be the history of humanity? It is not the history of humanity, it is only the history of politics, political conflicts, struggles, wars. It is as if you write the history of robbers, murderers, and you call it the history of humanity. These are great murderers. They are no ordinary murderers. Otherwise they would have been in the jail or sentenced to death. They are powerful people. They possess power. Unless their power is gone, they are worshipped like God. But their power sooner or later goes. A day comes when Hitler is no more honored, becomes an ugly, dirty name. A day comes when Stalin is no more honored. Just the reverse happens. But about the other dimension, the religious dimension of the same myth, the ascetic, the self-torturer, the masochist, people never come to know their reality. Because they never torture anybody. They torture only themselves. People go on respecting them. The so-called saints, the Mahatmas. People go on respecting them. People respect them very much. Because they are not harmful to anybody. Except to themselves. That is their business. The ascetics have been always worshipped. But asceticism is a kind of neurosis. It is not normal. To eat too much is abnormal. To fast is also abnormal. Right amount of food is normality. To be in the middle is to be normal. To be exactly in the middle is to be healthy and whole and holy. If you go to this extreme, you become a politician. If you go to the other extreme, you become a religious fanatic and ascetic. Both have missed balance. So the first thing to be understood, the religion that we are creating here, and it has to be created again and again, because it becomes corrupted again and again. The religion that we are invoking here is not political and is not in the ordinary sense even religious. It is neither sadistic nor masochistic. It is normal. It is to be in the middle. And what is the way to be in the middle? The way to be in the middle is to be in the world and not to be of it. To be middle means to live in the world but not allow the world to live in you. To be exactly middle, in the middle and be balanced means you are a witness to all that happens to you. Witnessing is the only foundation for a real, authentic religion. Whatsoever is has to be witnessed joyfully, ecstatically. Nothing has to be denied and rejected. All denial, all rejection will keep you in limits and you will remain in conflict. Everything has to be accepted as it is. And you have to be a watcher. Pleasure comes, watch. Pain comes, watch. Neither be disturbed by pleasure nor be disturbed by pain. Let your calm remain unperturbed. Let your silence remain undisturbed. Your tranquility unaffected. Pain will come and go, and pleasure will come and go. Success will come and go, and failure will come and go. And soon you will come to understand the point that it is only you who remains. Who remains? That is eternal. This witnessing is eternal. The content that float in the consciousness are temporary. One moment they are there, another moment they are gone. Don't be worried about them, either in favor or against. Don't try to possess them. Don't hold unto them, because they are going to go. They have to go. It is the very nature of things that they cannot be permanent. Something pleasant is happening. It cannot be permanent. It will have to go. And following it, something unpleasant is already getting ready. It is the rhythm of life, day and night, life and death, summer and winter. The wheel goes on moving. Don't hold and don't try to make something very, very permanent. It's not possible. The more you will try, the more frustrated you will become, because it cannot be done. And when it cannot be done, you feel defeated. You feel defeated because you have not understood one simple thing, that nothing can be static. Life is a flux. Only one thing is eternally there, and that is your consciousness, that innermost watcher. Sufis call it the watcher on the hills. The valley goes on changing, but the watcher remains on the top of the hill. Sometimes the valley is dark, and sometimes the valley is light, and sometimes there is dancing and singing, and sometimes there is weeping and crying, and the watcher sits on a hilltop and just goes on watching. By and by, the content of consciousness does not matter. Only consciousness becomes significant. That is the essential foundation of all true religion. And this is Sufi understanding. Before we enter into the small parable today, let me tell you, there are four ways to approach truth, to be connected with truth. The first in the East is known as Karma Yoga, the way of action. Man has three dimensions in him: action, feeling, knowing. So three ways use these three directions: action, knowing being. You can act, and you can act totally absorbed into it, and you can offer your act to God. You can act without becoming a doer. That is the first way, Karma Yoga. Being in action without being a doer. Let God do. Let God be in you. You efface yourself. In this, the path of action, consciousness changes the content. These two things have to be understood, consciousness and content. This is all your life consists of. There is something as the knower in you and something as the known. For example, you are listening to me. Now two things are there. Whatsoever I am saying will be the content. And whatsoever you are inside you, listening, watching, that is consciousness. You are looking at me. Then my figure in your eyes is the content. And you, who is looking at that figure in the eyes, is consciousness, the object and the subject. On the path of action, consciousness changes the content. That's what action is. You see, a rock is there. Somebody may stumble upon it. It is getting dark. Night is falling. You remove the rock from the path. This is act. What you have done, consciousness has changed the content. On the path of action, content is important. And it has to be changed. Somebody is ill, and you go and serve him, and you give him medicine. You are changing the content. Somebody has fallen in the river and is drowning, you jump in, and you save him from drowning. You have changed the content. Action is content directed. Action is will. Something has to be done. Of course, if the will remains ego-oriented, then you will not be religious. You will be great doers, but not religious. And your path will be of action, but not towards God. When you allow God to become your will, when you say, let thy will be mine, when you surrender your will into the feet of God and His will starts flowing through you, then it is the path of action, Karma Yoga. The goal of Karma Yoga is freedom, moksha. To change the content so much so that nothing antagonistic is left there. Nothing harmful is left there. To change the content according to your heart's desires. So that you can be free of limitations. This is the path of Jainism, yoga, and all action-oriented philosophies. The second path is the path of knowledge, knowing, Jnana Yoga. Consciousness is changed by the content on the second path. On the first, content is changed by consciousness. On the second, just the reverse. Consciousness is changed by the content. on the path of knowledge, you simply try to see what is the case, whatsoever it is. That's what Krishnamurti goes on teaching. That is the purest path of knowing. There is nothing to be done. You have just to attain to clarity, to see what is the case. You have just to see that which is. You are not to do anything. You have simply to drop your prejudices. You have to drop your concepts, notions, which can interfere with reality, which can interpret reality, which can color reality. You drop all that you carry in your mind as a priori notions, and then let the reality be there, whatsoever it is. You just see it, and that changes you. To know the real is to be transformed. To know the real as the real, then you cannot act in any other way than the way of reality. Once you have known the reality, reality starts changing you. Consciousness is changed by the content. The goal of the path of knowledge is truth. The goal of karma yoga, the path of action or will, was freedom. The path of knowing has the goal truth, Brahma. Vedanta, Hinduism and other paths of knowing. Sankhya, Ashtavakra, Krishnamurti. Thou art that. Let that be revealed, then you become that. Once you know that, you become that. By knowing God, one becomes God. Thou art that. That is the most essential phenomenon on the second path. Third is bhakti yoga, the way of feeling. Love is the goal. Consciousness changes the content and the content changes consciousness. The change is mutual. The lover changes the beloved changes the lover. On the path of will, consciousness changes content. On the path of knowing, content changes consciousness. On the path of feeling, both interact. Both affect each other. The change is mutual. That's why the path of feeling is more whole. The first path is half. The second path also another half. But the path of love is more round, more whole, because it has both in it. Vaishnavas, Christianity, Islam, and other paths. Ramanuja, Vallava, and other devotees. They say subject and object are not separate. So if one changes the other, then something will remain unbalanced. Let both change each other. Let both meet and merge into each other. Let there be a unity as men and women meet, and there is great joy. Let there be an orgasm between consciousness and content, between you and reality, between that and thou. Let it not be only a knowing. Let it not be only partial. Let it be total. These are the three ordinary paths. Sufism is the fourth. One of the greatest Sufis of this age was George Gurdjieff. His disciples, P.P. Ouspensky, has written a book, The Fourth Way. That's very symbolic. What is this fourth way? Neither of action, nor of knowing, nor of feeling. Then what is this fourth way? Because these are the three faculties. The fourth way is the way of transcendence. This is called in India Raja Yoga, the royal path, the fourth way. Neither consciousness changes the content, nor the content changes the consciousness. Nothing changes nothing. All is as it is, with no change. Content is there, consciousness is here. And no change is happening. No effort to change is there. This is what I mean by being. With all the three paths, something remains in the mind that has to be done. With the fourth, all beginning disappears. You simply accept whatsoever is. In that acceptance is transcendence. In that very acceptance you go beyond. You remain just a witness. You are no more doing anything here. You are just being here. The goal is not possible with the fourth way. There is no goal. With the first, the goal is freedom. With the second, truth. With the third, love. With the fourth, there is no goal. Zen, Sufism belong to this fourth. That's why Zen people say, the pathless path, the gateless gates, because there is no goal. The goalless goals. We are not going anywhere. We are not striving for anything. All that is needed is already here. It has been all along here. You have just to be silent and see. There is no need to change anything. With the fourth, the myth of change disappears. And then there is no need to change. Joy explodes. Because the energy that gets involved into changing things is no more involved anywhere. That energy is released. That released energy is what is called joy. And sometimes it happens unknowingly to you too. Sometimes sitting alone, doing nothing, you feel something happens. You cannot believe what it is. You cannot even trust it what it is. It is so incredibly new, so unknown. It happens to everybody. Rare moments, for no reason at all. You cannot figure it out. You cannot reckon why it has happened. You have been lying in your bathtub and suddenly something happens. The mind is not rushing in its usual way. The body is relaxed in the hot water. You are not doing anything. You are just being there. Suddenly it comes. The silence of the house. The birds singing outside. children playing in the streets. All is there as it has been, but with a new quality. There is great restfulness, a relaxation. Something in you is no more striving for anything. You are not goal-oriented. You are just here now. If you start thinking about it, what it is, you miss it immediately. If you start trying to get hold of it again, you will never get hold of it again. It comes when it comes. It comes when the right situation is there. But you cannot create that right situation. If you try to create, you will fall into one of the first three ways. If you try to change the content, you will become a follower of the path of action. If you try to change your consciousness through the content, you will become follower of the second path, the path of knowledge. If you try that both should meet and mingle and merge, then you will become a follower of the third path. But if you don't do anything, not willing, not knowing, not feeling, you just relax, then there is witnessing. Witnessing is not knowing. Witnessing is totally different. In fact, it cannot be said that you are witnessing. You are not doing anything, not even witnessing. You are just there. Things are happening. Suddenly a bird starts singing outside and you hear it. Because you are there, so you hear it. There is no effort to hear it. There is no deliberate concentration for it. Just the other day, I came across a Sankhya Sutra of immense beauty. Dhyanam nirvishyam mana. That's how Sankhya Sutras define Dhyan. Meditation is mind without thoughts, without feelings, without will. Meditation is consciousness without any striving. Dhyanam nirvishyam mana. There is no longing for any object. You are not striving for anything. Then you are in dhyana. Then you are in meditation, when you are not doing anything. On no plane you are doing anything. All doing has simply disappeared. There is utter silence inside you, an absolute rest. Let this word rest be remembered by you. Relaxation. You cannot do it, remember. How can you do it? If you do it, you cannot relax, because then relaxation becomes a goal and you become a doer. You can only understand it. You can only allow it to happen. You cannot do it. You cannot force it. It has nothing to do with your doing. You can only understand how it happens and you can remain in that understanding. And it comes. Nirvishyam mana. When the mind is with no desire, no object, no goal, not going anywhere, then how it can be tense? It is not a state of concentration. It is not concentration at all, because concentration will need striving. Concentration is a kind of tension. It is not even attention, because attention is also a kind of tension. The Encyclopedia Britannica defines the word meditation as concentration. That is absolutely wrong. Meditation is not concentration. Concentration means mind is striving, forcing, willing, trying to do something, putting one's whole energy into one direction. That's what concentration means. Meditation means when you are not putting your energy into any direction, it is simply overflowing. Not going in any particular direction, simply overflowing, like a fragrance overflowing a flower. Unaddressed, neither to the north nor to the south, it is not going anywhere. Or it is going everywhere. Wherever the winds will take it, it is ready to go. It is utterly relaxed. This moment happens sometimes to you. I would like you to remember that this is not something rare that happens only to religious people. It happens in ordinary life too, but you don't take note of it. You are afraid of it. Just few days before, I received a letter from a woman. She has been here, then she went home. 6 months she was trying and trying for meditation, and it was not happening according to her idea of meditation. She must have some desire that it should be like this. She must have some expectations, and it was not happening. She has written a letter that one day she was just sitting in the room. There was nothing to do. The husband has gone to the office, the children to the school, the house was empty, and she was just sitting, not doing anything. And there was no desire to do. Just sitting in the chair with closed eyes, and it happened. It was suddenly there with all its benediction. But she became frightened. She became frightened because when it happened, suddenly a fear came to her, because it was there, meditation was there, but she was not there. That became a great fear, and she simply pulled herself back out of it. It became as if she is disappearing. Yes, it happens. Your ego cannot exist there. Your ego is not possible there. Your ego is nothing but all your tensions together. Your ego is nothing but a bundle of past tensions, present tensions, and future tensions. When you are non-tense, the ego simply falls to the ground, into pieces. She became afraid. For 6 months she was trying to meditate and nothing was happening, and one day it happened. It came while she was completely unaware of it. She was taken aback. It was there, and she has been provoking for it and desiring and asking and praying, and it had not come, and then it came, but she missed. It was there, but she became frightened. It was too much. She felt as if she may disappear into it. She may not be able to come out of it. She pulled herself out of it. Now she writes that she is crying and weeping and wants it back. Now this wanting it back won't help, because it had come that day without any wanting, without even any idea of it, what was going to happen. Suddenly it had come. It always comes like sudden lightning. This is the fourth way, that's why it is called Raja Yoga, the royal path. The king is not supposed to do anything. Servants do. The king is not supposed to do anything. He simply sits on his throne and things happen. There are so many people to do it. That's why it is called Raja Yoga, the path of the king. The other three are ordinary. The fourth is really exceptional. The king is not expected to do anything. He simply sits there relaxed. That's what we mean by one who is a king. The doing has disappeared. Knowing has disappeared. Feeling has disappeared. The king is utterly relaxed. In that relaxation it happens. Sufi and Zen are Raja Yogas, the royal path. Neither consciousness changes the content, nor the content changes the consciousness. This is the fundamental principle. Nothing changes. There is no change happening. Things are. The flower is there and you are there. You don't change the flower and the flower does not change. Both exist together. It is existence with no motive. Zen people call it nirvana, the goal, the no goal, nirvana. One simply ceases to be. The word nirvana is beautiful. It means as if somebody has blown out a candle. Just few minutes before it was there, the lamp was burning bright, and then you blew it. Now the flame has disappeared into the infinity. It has become part of the cosmos. You cannot find it. You cannot trace it out where it has gone, where it is. It has simply disappeared. There is a Sufi parable. A Sufi mystic was entering in a village and he came across a small boy who was carrying a lit candle. The boy was going to the mosque. The night was coming and the boy was going to the mosque to put the candle there as an act of worship. The mystic saw the boy, the innocent boy, his face lighted by the light of the candle. The mystic asked the boy, "Have you yourself lighted the candle?" And the boy said, "Yes, sir." The mystic jokingly asked, "Then you must have seen from where the flame comes. Can you tell me from where the flame comes?" The boy laughed and blew out the candle and said, "Now you have seen it going. Can you say me where it has gone?" Nobody knows from where it comes. Nobody knows from to where it goes. It comes out of nothingness, or out of all, which means the same, and it goes back into nothingness or into the all, which is the same. That is nirvana. Sufis have the word for it, fana. Exactly the same. One is utterly lost. There is no need to do anything on the part of will or on the part of knowledge or on the part of feeling. Nothing is needed to be done. Because if you do something, you will remain. You will persist a little. Something of the ego may linger on. No change. No improvement, no effort to make you better, but just be. Muhammad says, "Be in this world as a stranger or as a passerby." be in this world, but don't be of it. Be in this world, but don't allow the world to be in you. Do for this world as if thou wert to live 1,000 years, and for the next as if thou wert to die tomorrow. Live this moment as if you are going to live forever, and yet mindful that the next moment may not come. So live totally, and yet remain a witness. Be involved in it, but still keep yourself like a watcher on the hill. That's what Junaid was doing. Now the story. The Sufi ancient Junaid taught by demonstration. Sufis always teach by demonstration. There is no better way. So it always happens that outsiders, when they come to the Sufi masters, are always puzzled, because they cannot understand what is happening. They don't know the whole story. They only take the fragment that is before their eyes. It may be a demonstration. It may be something which the disciples know and the master knows what is going on. Gurdjieff used to do that. And outsiders were always puzzled. And there are hundreds of books written on Gurdjieff by outsiders. Naturally, they are all against, because they don't know the whole story. The whole story is possible to know only for an insider. For example, if you have suddenly reached Gurdjieff, you would have been surprised. He may be shouting, humiliating somebody, using abusive words, and he was a past master in using abusive words. And when he was in a rage, he was really in a rage, as if he is going to murder. And if you will see it, naturally you will think what kind of master he is. He does not seem at all enlightened, because you have a certain idea of enlightenment, that the master will be such and such. He should fulfill your expectation, but masters don't exist to fulfill your expectations. And they have something else far more important to do than just going on fulfilling your expectations. They are not for that kind of work here. They are not asking your respect or any respectability from you. They are not bothered by the public opinion. They are not asking your vote. They are doing something immense, which is possible to understand only when you are an insider. Now the person knows on whom Gurdjieff is throwing all kinds of abuse. He knows. Or maybe in some moments he knows, and in some moments he also misses. Because there are moments when you may feel, what kind of man is this? Why is he abusing me so harsh? What I have done? You may have done a very small wrong, negligible. And he is going out of all proportions, as if you have committed a sin. Sometimes even the insider may miss, but the insider will be able to remember. Gurdjieff has said that you have to be watchful, and I will provoke you. And I will provoke you in many ways, so that you can lose your watchfulness. Now something is transpiring between him and his disciples. You as an outsider will miss it. He is not enraged. The ridge is just acting, and the disciple is being provoked to get angry. If the disciple gets angry, he misses the point. He loses an opportunity. If the disciple remains calm and quiet, watchful, does not allow the content to change his consciousness, and does not try in any way to change Gurdjieff and his behavior, that is consciousness trying to change the content. The content is there, Gurdjieff is mad. So okay, Gurdjieff is mad. And one is there watching. Neither the consciousness affecting the content, nor the content affecting the consciousness. And you cannot deceive Gurdjieff, because a slight change in your consciousness, and your whole behavior changes, your face changes, your aura changes, your energy pattern changes, you are no more the same person. If the disciples can remain undisturbed, unperturbed, can remain as he was before Gurdjieff started going into this rage, he has taken one step into the inner journey. He has come closer to the Master. But it will be difficult for people who come from the outside. If you had gone to Gurdjieff, it was a rare phenomenon. Every night he will invite all his disciples, the whole community will gather. And there will be eating and drinking. And so much that anybody from the outside will think these people are just mad, what they are doing. And Gurdjieff will go on forcing people to eat and to drink. He will force people to drink so much alcohol. That you will think that this is an Epicurean phenomenon. What kind of religion is this? Just eat, drink, be merry. And that too is going to extremes. And Gurdjieff was so insistent that go on drinking. He himself used to drink as much as a man can drink, but he was never drunk. That was the whole point. He will tell the disciple to drink, and there comes a point when you lose control. Immediately, your reality comes up, surfaces. You can never see the real person unless he is drunk. People have repressed themselves so much that only alcohol can bring them up from their depressions. It was one of the greatest experiments ever done by any masters. In the East, we know it has been done by tantrikas down the ages. But Gurdjieff was the first man to do it in the West. Whenever he will see a disciple has drunken too much and has come to his reality, now he is no more the same person that he was pretending to be, then he will watch. Now he can be helpful. Now he knows you are unconscious. What psychoanalysis does in years, he can do in one day. Psychoanalysis goes on poking you to bring your unconscious up. The psychoanalyst will sit day in, day out by the side of the coach and listen to all kinds of nonsense and rubbish for years, just to help you so that you go on throwing rubbish, by and by the real will start coming up. When the top rubbish is thrown, then the inner rubbish will come up. But it takes years. Gurdjieff used to do in a master stroke, in a single day. The first day the disciple will be there, and the first initiation will be through alcohol. The Gurdjieff wants to know, the master wants to know the unconscious immediately, because there is real work to be done. He does not want to waste time with the conscious personality. That is a mask. Once he has known, then there will be no need. But he will take you into deep drunkenness. Now, if somebody comes from the outside, and so-called religious people, they will be puzzled, very much puzzled, what is happening. If somebody comes who has been fasting, Gurdjieff will give him too much to eat. And if somebody comes who has been eating too much, he will put him to fast. He would like to disturb your old patterns. Because when patterns are disturbed, your reality comes up. It is like changing gears. When you change one gear to another, just in the middle you have to pass through the neutrals. When a man, for example, a jaina, has never eaten meat, his whole life. If he goes to Gurdjieff, Gurdjieff will force him to eat meat. Now this is destroying his whole personality. For 50 years he has not eaten, never touched, maybe he has never seen meat. Now his whole personality will revolt. He will feel nauseous. The very idea will be nauseous. My own grandmother, while she was alive, won't allow even tomatoes in the house because they look like meat. That was her idea. Tomatoes, so innocent people. They were not allowed in the home. So a person who has not even eaten tomatoes, if he is forced to eat meat, you can understand in what turmoil the master is throwing him. He is putting him upside down. It will be really destruction of all his patterns. He will vomit. He will fall ill. He may have fevers. He may have nightmares. But this will destroy all his learned patterns. And he will become again a child. And from there, work can start. If a man has been eating meat, drinking, Gurdjieff will put him on vegetable food. He will tell him not to drink at all. He will make him a vegetarian, a teetotalian. He will force him to be as holy as possible. The technique is the same, to disturb the past, to put things upside down, so that the facet no more functions, and the mask can be removed, and the reality can be seen. A master has to put his disciples in their childhood again, because from there they have been distracted. Somebody has become a Mohammedan, somebody has become a Hindu, somebody has become a Christian. From that moment they have been distracted. The master has to put them back into their childhood. So another kind of life, another kind of reality starts growing. The Sufi ancient Junaid taught by demonstration. Through a method in which he actually lived the part which he was trying to illustrate. This is an example. He will live the part that he was going to illustrate. But how an outsider can know it, what is going on? It is a drama. It is a psychodrama. Only the people who are inside, who know the inside information, what is going on, will be able to see. Even they may miss many times. Even suspicion will arise to them. For example, a naked woman is dancing. Wine flasks are there. Wine is being poured into glasses, is handed over to people. there is luxury all around. Dance and music, a kind of argy going on. And Junaid sitting just in the middle of it, the master of the ceremony. Now you look at it, and you have certain ideas how a master should be. It is very rare to find a man who does not come with any idea. It is natural. It can be forgiven. Everybody comes with an idea. If a Christian comes to me, he has the idea of Christ. He starts looking in me. Am I behaving like Christ or not? If he feels no, then I cannot be. A Jaina comes, he has the idea of Mahavir. He looks. He is expecting me to behave like a Mahavira. I am neither Christ nor Mahavir nor Buddha. I am just myself. I exist in my own right. I have no borrowed authority. My authority is mine own. But people come with ideas. They have been trained. So it becomes very difficult. They look from the prejudices, hidden behind the prejudices. If I fulfill their prejudice, then it is okay. If I don't fulfill, then they will think this is not the master. This is not the true master. We have to go somewhere else. And remember, no true master has ever fulfilled anybody's desire. He cannot fulfill if he wants to help you. He has to annoy you. He has to shock you. He has to be shocking. Because his whole work is to shock you into awareness. Once he was found by a number of seekers, sitting surrounded by every imaginable luxury. These people left his presence and sought the house of a most austere and ascetic holy man whose surroundings were so plain that he had nothing but a mat and a jug of water. Now Junaid is one of the greatest Sufi masters. But some ordinary man may fulfill their desire. In fact, only an ordinary man can fulfill their desire. He can pretend to be whatsoever you expect him to be. No real man is going to be defined by you. Remains indefinable. No real man can be put into categories. He remains uncategorized. A real man is like mercury. You cannot hold him into tight compartments. A real man is freedom. If you want to see the real master, you will have to put all your notions away. And how can you have the right notion? You don't know even who you are. And you pretend to know what a master should be. You are completely oblivious of your own reality. And you want to believe that you can know the ultimate reality or the ultimate expression of reality. It is pretentious and it is dangerous. And only you will be the loser. If you want to seek the real master, you will have to drop all expectations. You will have to go nude, naked. You will have to go without any mind. Only then there is possibility of any contact. Just the other night, one young man took sannyas. I was watching him. He was very close. I was watching him, whatever I was saying to him, and I talked to him almost for half an hour. was not heard by him, I was watching. His ears were closed. His mind was very much clouded. And then finally I asked, "Have you something to say to me?" And he said, "Yes, I am a Christian." "And how I can have two names? I have been given a Christian name. I have been initiated into Christianity. And you are giving me another name. Now there will be difficulty." I was watching that he has not heard a single word. I asked him, "If you really know that you are growing, you know that you are silent, happy, blissful. If by being a Christian you are contented, then there is no need to be a sannyasin. You are already a sannyasin. Why you have come here then? For what? If things are going perfectly well, wherever you are, be there with all my blessings. Why you have come for sannyas? Nobody has asked you. You have come on your own. You have asked me to initiate you. And now you bring the problem. If you are not growing, if you are not happy where you are, then drop the past. Now this young man is carrying a notion. He thinks he is a Christian. How you can be a Christian if you have not contacted Christ? The so-called priest in the church cannot make you a Christian. Only when you partake of Christ, you become a Christian. The ordinary priest himself is not a Christian. What to say about the ordinary priest? Even the Vatican Pope is not a Christian, cannot be. Because to be a Christian does not mean to belong to a church. It means to enter into Christ consciousness. Jesus is not the only Christ. Buddha is also a Christ. So is Muhammad. So is Junaid. So is Kabir and so is Nanak. Christ is a state, just as Buddha is a state. It is the same name. It is the same state. These two names indicate towards the same state. Jainas call it the state of Jinnah, the conquerors, because they follow the path of will. Buddhists call it the state of Buddha, the state of awakening, awareness, witnessing. They follow the fourth path. Christ is a state, ultimate state, where you are no more a man, but you become God. When you transcend humanity, when you surpass humanity. But you can become Christian only if you partake from a Christ. Otherwise, your Christianity will be false. And your false Christianity will prevent you from making contact with any living Christ. But people come with their minds. It can be understood. It can be forgiven. But by forgiving it, does not mean that you have to cling to it. It has to be dropped. Now this young man can become Christian for the first time if he enters in me and allows me to enter in him. For the first time he has come around Christ consciousness. but he is afraid. He is afraid because he is Christian. And naturally he cannot think me as Christ because he has an idea of Christ. If he sees me crucified, only then he will believe, but then it will be too late. And I am not going to repeat the drama. Once it is good, twice it is boring. Now these seekers came to Junaid. Junaid was sitting surrounded by every imaginable luxury. They must have been repeated. They must have been solved and annoyed. What kind of master is he? Just the other day, Maitre brought a Hindi magazine. They have written an article against me as cover story. And on the cover page, the title is, What Kind of God? Naturally, they have a certain idea, what kind of God? I am not Rama, I am not Krishna, I am not Mahavira, so what kind of God? And these are the same people, when Mahavira was there, they were asking what kind of God, because he was not Rama and he was not Krishna. And these are the same people, when Krishna was there, they were asking what kind of God, because he was not Rama. These are the same people who go on asking again and again. Rama is never repeated. Nothing is ever repeated. This existence is so unique and so beautiful. So if you want to make contact with reality, you will have to drop notions. We all have notions. The Sunday school teachers asked her class to learn an appropriate phrase from the Bible and recite it as they were putting their pennies in the collection box. On the following Sunday, little Lukas came of bit. It is more blessed to give than to receive. As he dropped his penny in the box, Richard's quotation was, The Lord loveth a cheerful giver. And this too was well received, and so on down the line of little Lyard. As he grudgingly made his contribution, he mumbled, A fool and his money are soon parted. Now all the three boys had looked in the Bible, in the same Bible. But all the three boys have found three different quotes. When you look, you always find something that reflects of you. Father Duffy and Rabbi Machnik were chatting at a town meeting. Could I ask you a question? Inquired Father Duffy. Of course, said Rabbi Machnik. It has always been my understanding that the apostles were Jews. Is not that correct? Absolutely right, replied the rabbi. Then how the deuce did the Jews let go of a good thing like the Catholic Church and let the Italians grab it? Now that is a relevant question, how the Jews allowed such a beautiful business. The richest business in the world is Catholic Church. The question is relevant, how the Jews allowed it, how they missed it. This is not very Jewish. our minds continuously work. In a small class, the teacher asked, "Who is the greatest man of the world?" One boy said, "Abraham Lincoln." Another boy said, "Mahatma Gandhi." Another boy said, "Washington." Another boy said, "Karl Marx," and so on and so forth. And then came the little Jewish boy who said, "Jesus Christ." The teacher was surprised. And the teacher said, "Are not you a Jew? How come?" The little boy said, "In my heart of hearts I know that the greatest man of the world is Moses, but business is business." Whenever you interpret something, rather than thinking that it is objective, always remember it is a reflection of your mind. Now these seekers were very much puzzled, seeing the luxury and Junaid sitting there. Now these people must have been very, very attached to things. These people must have been very, very desirous of having, possessing. These people must have been very materialistic. Seeing Junaid also sitting surrounded by all these luxuries, a deep jealousy must have arisen in them, which is not visible to them. And whenever people are very indulgent, they have a religious idea that people who are indulgent, they are not religious. How can they be religious? They are indulgent. So people who are religious must be far away from all kinds of indulgence. If you are too much money maniac, then you will have an idea that the real man of God will not have any desire for money. This has to be understood. You always put the opposite higher than you, because you condemn yourself utterly. You know that you are mad after money. So if you see somebody surrounded by money, immediately the idea comes, so he is just like me. Nothing special, just like me. If you are too much sexual, if your mind is continuously fantasizing sex, and you see Junaid sitting with a beautiful woman, immediately Junaid is condemned in your mind. So he is just like you. This is what you would like to do. So what is the point of making this man your master? People go on searching the opposites. People only respect the opposite. This has to be understood, this tendency. People are attracted by the opposites. But the opposite cannot change you. Because the attraction of the opposite is a very natural law. Man is attracted in women, women are attracted in man. The poor is attracted in the rich, and you will be surprised, rich people are attracted in the poor. Rich people always think that the poor are enjoying great things. They have beautiful sleep, they have good appetite. Rich people always think that there is great joy in nature, living in a hut, in a cottage. Rich people always think that in small villages far away, there is joy and bliss. In great cities, how can there be joy? They live in the great cities. They hanker for the village. And ask the villagers, he hankers for Bombay, New York, London. His hankering is to reach the biggest city possible. His hankering is to live in a big skyscraper. He wants all that the rich people have. Remember, rich people are interested in the poor. So whenever they say an enlightened person living in poverty, their head bows down. They say, this is the right thing. If they see a Janak, a rich man, enlightened, they cannot believe. It is impossible for them. Their understanding becomes a barrier. Now, an enlightened person has no bondage. He can live in poverty if he feels this is going to help his disciples. He can live in riches if he feels this is going to help his disciples. His whole life is a teaching. It is a deliberate device. It is a situation. It depends on him what he chooses. He has no bondage to anything. And he can change from one to another. He is utterly free. They thought, this is not the right man. They left Junaid. They missed a great opportunity. These people left his presence and sought the house of a most austere and ascetic holy man, whose surroundings were so plain that he had nothing but a mat and a jug of water. They must have thought, this is the right man. They were all worldly people. Seeing Junaid surrounded by worldly luxuries, they thought, he is just like us. You look into your so-called religious people and their respect, whom they respect, and you will be surprised. For example, in India, Jainas are one of the most richest peoples. They are the Jews in India. They have all kinds of luxuries. A small community, but has one of the biggest portion of this country's wealth. See their sins. They are naked. They don't purchase anything. This is rare. The community is rich and the community worships somebody who is absolutely naked. But this is nothing. It looks a strange logic, but it is not. The opposite is attractive. The rich people can worship only the poor. They live in luxury. They can only worship somebody who lives in austerity. If you want Jainas to be your disciples, you will have to become a masochist. You will have to torture yourself. The lean and thin you become, just bones, the more and more respect will be coming to you. You will have to commit slow suicide. The more you are dead, more people will be coming to worship you. And this is a strange. These people are living wealthy, rich lives. But the opposite attracts. It is always the opposite that attracts. Another example. Mohammedans are poor people in this country. When their religious festival days come, they will purchase new clothes, new perfume. They will prepare good food for themselves and invite friends. When Mohammedans' religious function comes, they will wear new clothes because that is the only time they purchase or they can purchase. Then the whole year they will use the same clothes. And they will prepare good sweets, delicious foods, invite people. those days will be of great joy and they will spend. They cannot afford the whole year round, only once or twice in a year. Now, the Jainas, the richest community in India, when their religious festival days come, they fast. They don't eat at all. The whole year round, they eat too much. Jainas are the only people in India who go for dieting. They eat too much. They are the only people who are interested in naturopathy. But when their religious days come, they fast. On their religious days, they live very saintly life. They will not use your ordinary clothes. They will use just white clothes. They will look saintly. They will go in saintly robes to their temples. This is only for 10 days. The whole year round, they are just the opposites. What is happening? The opposite attracts. Remember it always, that just because something is opposite to you, it does not mean it is true. It may be opposite to you, it may not be true at all. Or the person who is just being opposite to you may be trying to attract your respect. It is very easy to gain respect just living opposite to people. And people very, very respect those who are masochistic. They think this is great. They are torturing themselves for the other world. Their sacrifice is great. It is nothing. It is simply neurosis. These people are ill. They need psychiatric treatment. Because it is natural to be joyous, to be healthy, to be hungry, to eat. It is natural to live comfortably. It is unnatural to create discomfort. It is very normal to find a way of life which is less and less inconvenient. A person who seeks inconvenience is somehow pathological. So they left the presence of Junaid. They reached to a very, very ascetic and austere man whose surroundings were so plain that he had nothing but a mat and a jug of water. It appealed to them. The spokesman of the seeker said, "Your simple manners and austere environment are much more to our liking than the garish and shocking excesses of Junaid, who seems to have turned his back upon the path of truth, as if they know what truth is and what the path of truth is. As if they know what was transpiring there between Junaid and his disciples. As if they know that it was a psychodrama. They know nothing. From the very outside, they judged. Never judge anything from the outside. And when you go inside, the deeper you go, the totally different will be the vision. Then you will see to reach. Then you will see what reality is. Never watch from the outside. Here it comes. Happens every day. People come to watch. They see you dancing, singing, and they think, what is this? Dancing and singing? How dancing and singing is related to religion? They have such an idea that religion means somebody should be sitting under a tree with closed eyes in a yoga posture. If people see you all sitting here under trees with closed eyes in yoga posture, then we will be mobbed. Then the whole country will start rushing here. So many saints. But I prevent them. I have my own devices. Simple devices. If they see men and women holding hands, they escape. This is not the place. This is what they always wanted to do and they have not done. They feel jealous. This can't be a religious place. These people are just living in the world, very worldly, laughing, dancing, singing, loving. This is not their idea of religion. But they don't know what is transpiring here. It is possible that a man who is sitting under the tree with closed eyes in a yoga posture will be a murderer. It happened once. A man murdered and escaped. The police followed. The police was coming closer and closer. And then there came a river. And it was flooded. And the murderer was puzzled. He did not know how to swim. And it was dangerous to get into the river. Seeing nothing else, he saw a man, a saint, sitting under the tree. He has rubbed ashes on his body. So he also threw his clothes in the river, became naked, rubbed the ashes on the body, sat under the tree. The police officers came. They looked at these two ascetic great saints. They touched their feet. In India, that's how things are. They touched their feet. The murderer laughed inside. He said, "This is miracles." Just few minutes before they were after him. If he had been caught, he would have been sentenced to death. But now they became his followers. They started coming to him for satsanga, to sit by his side. And in India, every stupid person knows things about spirituality. So he started talking about spirituality. By and by, greater officers came. Finally, the king came. And when king touched his feet, he could not believe what is happening. But this happens. You look only the posture. You look only the outside. It is possible when people are dancing, they may be in a state of utter silence. The music is outside. The noise is outside. Their bodies are moving. There is great movement. And there may be a point deep inside which is not moving at all. In fact, to attain to that point which is not moving, movement is the best background. When everything is moving around you, the wheel is moving fast. Just at the center of it, the center of the cyclone, nothing is moving. You may see one man sitting silently with closed eyes, and he may be fantasizing about women. And it is possible that a man may be holding the hand of his woman and may not be sexual at all in that moment. But that is something inner. In fact, as I see reality, to be with a loving woman and to be with a loving man is the best way to get beyond sexuality. If you love, sex disappears. If you have enjoyed, penetrated, got involved into love energy, sooner or later you will find that sex disappears. If you want to remain sexual, starve yourself of sex and you will remain sexual and your mind will go on fantasizing. Just you can try a small experiment. You eat well, I'm not saying too much, just the right amount. What the Buddha calls samyak ahar, right food. Whatever is needed by your body, eat it, and you can forget about food. Fast one day, and you will think the whole day about food, and you will fantasize. Fantasy comes out of unlived experiences. Your so-called saints sitting under trees in austerity may be just the opposite. People inside may be fantasizing all kinds of things, may be fighting with them. I am creating a totally different kind of situation where you are allowed to be natural, so you can see everything that your mind wants to see, and then you can go beyond. That was the situation, but they missed. That's what was happening there. Junaid was sitting in luxury with his disciples, creating a situation in which they can become very, very silent and witnessing. Your simple manners, they said to the ascetic, and austere environment are much more to our liking than the garish and shocking excesses of Junaid, who seems to have turned his back upon the path of truth. The ascetic heaved a great sigh and started to weep. The ascetic knew far better about his own insight. He must have been a sincere man. Otherwise, it is very difficult when people are respecting and worshipping you to say, no, you are wrong. Must have been a sincere man. He said, my dear friends, shallowly infected by the outward signs which beset men at every turn, he said, know this and cease to be unfortunate. The great Junaid is surrounded at this moment by luxury because he is impervious to luxury, and I am surrounded by simplicity because I am impervious to simplicity. He said something tremendously meaningful, tremendously significant. Know this, that don't be befooled by shallow outward signs. Otherwise, you will remain always unfortunate. You will miss the real person, because the real will not in any way fulfill your expectations. He has no obligation to fulfill your expectations. And the unreal and the pseudo will always be ready to fulfill your expectations, and you will fall in the trap of the unreal, and you will remain unfortunate. He said, know this and cease to be unfortunate. Know one thing, that the outward is not a sign for the inward. If you want to see the inward, you have to see it directly, immediately. You are not to see from the outward signs. The great Junaid is surrounded at this moment by luxury because he is impervious to luxury. He can be surrounded in luxury because he can remain beyond it. He is impervious to it. There is no passage inside his being for luxury to enter and affect him. He is a watcher on the hills. He is there and not yet there. Luxury is surrounding him, but he is not surrounded by luxury. That's why he is sitting there. And as far as I am concerned, he said, I am surrounded by simplicity because I am afraid of luxury. I am still weak. I am still desirous. I am pretending to be simple. Junaid is simple. He can afford to be surrounded by luxury because he is simple. He knows his simplicity cannot be destroyed and corrupted by anything. He is so beyond the material that it does not matter. The material matters no more. He can be in the marketplace and yet in his deep meditation. I cannot afford that. I am not impervious to luxury. On the contrary, I am impervious to simplicity. Although simplicity is all around me, it is not entering in me. There is no passage. The man must have been an authentic, honest man. Of course, he is still moving in the wrong direction, but not a fake. Moving in the wrong direction, but moving with sincerity. When you move in the wrong direction with sincerity, sooner or later your sincerity will bring you to the right direction. The story does not say anything, but one thing is certain. This man understands Junayd. How long he can remain away from Junayd? He will have to go to the master. And he understands his problem. How long he can go on pretending by arranging simplicity around him? One day or other, he will get out of it. And he will start looking for the right key. The right key is the fourth way. The fourth way means content not affecting consciousness, consciousness not affecting content. The world is there, I am here. There is no bridge. There is no meeting. This is the path of Sufism, the path of Zen, the path of all essential religion. Enough for today.